Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
We all have emotional responses to things. I mean, all day long we're having emotions. You don't ask for your emotions. They just grab you when people do things to you. But if we understand that I don't have to follow my emotions, what I need to do is to step back a moment when I have a negative emotion and say, okay, what happened to trigger this? And now how am I going to respond to it? And you have a thoughtful response to it rather than just a reaction to what happened, because your reaction will almost always be negative and make things worse. But if I take time to think, what would be the loving thing to do in this situation, I'm far more likely to do something that'll have a positive influence.
I could listen to that man talk for hours. We are always so grateful to have Dr. Gary Chapman join Dr. Jim Burns in studio on the Homeward broadcast. And during the next half hour, you are in for a treat. A brand new conversation with Jim and Gary talking about help and hope for desperate marriages. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. If you're looking for something to do, you can visit apu.edu/calendar and check out the next big athletic event or concert or theater production. It's summer now, but of course, when the fall kicks in, it'll be a full slate of events once again at APU. And now, without further ado, let's hear part one of Dr. Jim Burns' conversation with Dr. Gary Chapman.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. I am smiling today because Dr. Gary Chapman is with us again. Hope and healing for desperate marriage is what we're talking about. It's good we're talking on the radio because sometimes you use the word desperate marriage. You don't want too many people to know that you have a desperate marriage, but a lot of people do have desperate marriages. Even the marriages in the most desperate of trouble can be rescued, I'm convinced, and I know Dr. Chapman believes that as well. He's the author of the best-selling 5 Love Languages, New York Times bestseller. He's a seasoned pastor and counselor for over 30 years, helping people grow and move forward in their faith and also move forward in their marriages. He's got a radio program. Gary and his wife, Carolyn, have been married for 45 years plus. They have 2 adult children, 2 grandchildren. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to be with
you.
Well,
great to have you, and it's truly an honor and a pleasure. I've said this so often, but you have influenced my life in so many ways, and now as we've got to spend more time, I just appreciate who you are and what you stand for. Now, you and Carolyn have been married for, was it 45 years, or are you?
Actually, we're up to 47 now.
47
oh,
years.
Yes.
Boy, you must have got married when you were about 6, because
oh,
you don't look
kid.
That.
Just
you don't
kid.
Look that old. But early in your marriage, you both had a pretty rough time, didn't you?
We did. You know, we were Christians before we got married. We prayed about getting married. We believed it was God's will for us to get married. But in reality, once we got married, it went downhill pretty fast. In fact, my wife says it started downhill on the honeymoon, you know, and we were a long time recovering. So, yeah, we had a really hard time in the early years of our marriage.
Yeah. But what you learned was that even in a desperate time, and I think I've heard you say before that those first, you know, especially those first years and the first early months, it was somewhat desperate, but yeah. You were able to work through this and actually have a very good marriage now.
Yeah, and I think that's, Jim, probably why I have so much hope for people. Yeah. You know, they often come to my office and they don't have any hope. Yeah. And I say to them, you know, I can understand. I know what it is to be married and be miserable and feel like there's no good way out of it. Maybe you can operate on my hope for a while, you know, because I have hope for you.
Yeah.
So I invite people to live on my hope when they don't have hope. Yeah. And I think it's because I do know the desperate feeling of being right. married and feel like it's never going to work
yeah.
out.
And not only for yourself, but there are so many people who would walk into your office or who you would see at the incredible amount of seminars that you do who really are in desperate need. And so you almost have to give them hope. How do you begin when a couple comes to you and says, we're right on the brink?
Yeah.
In fact, the truth is we're living together, but we're living separate lives. We're not even sure we have the emotional strength to try,
yeah.
but we're here.
Well, first thing I do is listen. I think listening is powerful. And if you try to give people any ideas on what they could do before you've heard them, I can tell you they will not follow your ideas. All of us need to sense that we've been heard by someone before we're going to be able to listen to them. So I will often spend first 2 sessions just mainly listening. And I say to them at the end of the first session, you know, I think I'm beginning to get the feel for your story. And I'm very empathetic with your pain and where you are. I want to talk with you another one more time, because I think there are other things that I want to make sure I understand where you are. In the meantime, let me just ask one thing: that this week you call a truce. You don't throw any grenades this week. You just live, but don't throw any grenades. And maybe smile at each other once in a while if you can. Maybe say good morning, you know, rather than just being silent. And then I want to talk with you again next week. And they get the sense right away that I'm not a quick fix person. You know, I'm not going to preach a sermon to them, give them a scripture verse and say, go home and do this. And then after I've really heard them through and they understand that I sense how deep this is, and this is not an easy thing to turn around, then I say to them, you know, I want you to know that in spite of what you've told me, I really believe there's hope for the two of you. And then we start working on the positive.
And when you say that there is hope, it really does make a difference for them, doesn't it? Even if they don't know you, you're saying, wait, no, I do have hope. Now, when you've had this kind of conversation and yet they do have a desperate marriage, you say that they must learn how to practice what you like to call reality living. In a nutshell, what does that look like?
Well, to me, this is really, really important. And there are six principles in reality living. One is that I am responsible for my attitude. Always. You know, Jim, I may be in prison, and if they let me outside to just look around, I can look at the mud or I can look at the stars. And that's true in every situation of life. You know, if I'm married to an alcoholic spouse, I can say, you know, I'm married to this spouse. They've been this way for 10 years. It's never going to be any different. I'm destined to be miserable in this marriage. And you can think that way. Or you can say, you know, I'm married to an alcoholic spouse. This is a serious problem. But I believe there are answers, and I'm going to start looking for the answers. And so we choose our attitude always, no matter how desperate the marriage is. We choose the way we think. And then secondly, our attitudes affect our actions. Because if I'm thinking that I'm going to look for hope, then I'll start looking for hope. Maybe I'll call a counselor. Maybe I'll find out about treatment centers. Maybe I'll talk about someone else who has an alcoholic spouse. But I start doing something. And then the third thing is to realize that I cannot change others, but I can influence others. Now, almost everybody agrees with that first statement. You can't change your spouse. You know,
we sure try.
We try. But we can influence our spouse. I'll just give you a simple illustration, Jim. I come home in the afternoon, let's say, and I walk in the house, and I find my wife, and I greet her, and I give her a hug and kiss on the cheek, and I say, honey, how'd your day go? And then I say, what can I do to help you, honey? I have influenced her. My behavior influenced her in a very positive way. On the other hand, if I come home, I walk in the house, I don't bother to find her, I just flip on the television, get me something to drink, and start unwinding, I have influenced my wife in a very negative way. Every day we influence people. So if you're in a desperate marriage, what I'm saying is, it's true, you can't make your spouse change, but you can influence your spouse. And this book is really about how to have a positive influence in a very difficult marriage. Then the fourth principle of reality living is that my emotions do not need to control my behavior.
It's a big one.
Most people, that's what happens. You feel sad, then you act sad. You feel disappointed, it shows up in your behavior. But if we, on the other hand, say, I'm disappointed, I feel sad, I feel angry, but I'm not going to let my anger control my behavior. I'm going to do something that's positive in this relationship. Going to do something that's positive for myself. Going to do something. And so if we understand that our emotions need not control our behavior, it's a fundamental principle in what I'm calling reality living. And then the fifth is that admitting my imperfections doesn't mean I'm a bad person. See, most of the time in a desperate marriage, the person will feel that the spouse is 95% of the problem. And they may be. You know, in an alcoholic situation or some of these other things we talk about, they may be the major problem. But we all understand we're not perfect. So we have imperfections. Maybe it's only 5%. And if we're going to be redemptive in this situation, we have to deal with our failures. And so to admit that I didn't handle this very well or that I was harsh to you last night is not meaning that I'm a bad person. It means I'm a human and I'm trying to deal with my failures. And the sixth principle is that love is the most powerful weapon in the world for good. So in a desperate marriage, the most powerful thing you can do is to learn their love language and speak it to them unconditionally. And then if they don't change with that kind of influence, then there's a place for tough love. And I talk about both those, tender love and tough love. But it's a powerful approach to helping someone.
Boy, it really is. It's a powerful approach to doing life in general. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll unpack some of these. Dr. Gary Chapman with us, author of the best-selling book, Five Love Languages. This book is called Desperate Marriage, Moving Toward Hope and Healing in Your Relationship. Hey, listening to those six realities for married life, that gives me hope. Roger?
Always gives us hope to have Dr. Gary Chapman join us here on the Homeward Broadcast, and hope you're enjoying this new conversation with Jim and Gary talking about help and hope for desperate marriages. Remember, we're streaming audio at homeward.com. If you'd like the full-length audio CD of this program, there will be a part two, rest assured. You can get both installments on one full-length audio CD. Drop us a line. I include a gift of any amount when you write to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, where the swallows go, the zip code 92693, and also check us out online at homeward.com if you're not there already to learn more about the books that we have available to you. There's articles and media, sure. You can just go to articles and media and type in marriage for the search engine there and find all sorts of different articles, but books too. Books that you can read as a couple, you can read individually. Jim and Kathy's book, Closer, the devotional book for couples, and also Creating an Intimate Marriage, two great resources to help improve the quality of communication in your marriage. And you'll find that information and more when you go to homeward.com.
I'm Jim Burns, and for our Homeward Snapshot, I want to talk about six keys to a better marriage today. Joining me here in studio are Bill and Debbie Davis.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Okay, Bill and Debbie, when was the last time the two of you had a date night?
A date night?
We don't date, Jim. We're married.
Right. Okay. Well, next question. When was the last time you took a vacation together, just the two of you?
Oh, come on, Jim. Is it really that important? I mean, you know, we're both so busy with work and the kids. Who has time for that stuff?
Well, I think it's very important. And every marriage needs some one-on-one nourishment to stay healthy.
And now that you mention it, there is that really cute bed and breakfast that I've always wanted to go to.
There is? I didn't even know.
Well, I guess we never really talked about it much.
But you're talking now, and that's the main thing. And don't forget saying those three little words that are so powerful in a marriage.
Dinner was great?
No, silly. I love you.
Oh, well, I love you too.
This marriage is looking better already. And if you'd like my free tip sheet called Six Keys to a Better Marriage today, go to homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns.
Welcome back. Boy. Great conversations today with Dr. Gary Chapman, Hope and Healing for Desperate Marriages. It's a great book, Desperate Marriage. I read the entire book. And yet, you know, I'm not going through every one of these issues, but you may be going through some tough things. And it may be something where, you know, there's been sexual abuse. There's been someone who's been unfaithful. There's a workaholic in your home. There's some distance with emotion. And yet we can talk about these. And I really appreciate those six realities for married life that we just covered. I feel like there was probably some people driving down the road wanting to write those down as fast as they can pick up your book, Dr. Chapman, and get it in a much deeper thing. I want to throw out a sentence to you, and I want you to respond to it, because a lot of what you're talking about is attitude. And here's a sentence, and I want you to respond. Your circumstance may not change, but your attitude can change, and that makes all the difference in the world. Do you believe that?
I really do. You know, the reality is there are many circumstances that we cannot change because it involves other people, and we can't change other people. But the way we respond to that will make a difference for us and may well make a difference for the other person. In any situation, I choose the way I respond. Let's say my spouse lashes out at me in a very harsh way, okay? It hurts. It's painful. I may feel anger along with the hurt inside. Now, how am I going to respond? I can lash back. And that's the typical response for some people. Lash back. What happens? We get into an argument. I say more things. They say more things. And if finally one of us gets tired of it and walks out of the room, and the relationship is fractured. On the other hand, if they say something harsh to me and I take time, first of all, to think, don't respond immediately, but think, then I may well have a more positive response and say to them, you know, I'm hurt very deeply by what you just said. In fact, I'm hurt so deeply that I can't talk about it right now. But we do need to talk about it. I'm going to have to take a walk. And you take a walk. They've had time now to cool down. You have time to cool down. Then you come back and you say, okay, I think I can talk about this. Are you open to talking about it now? now in a more civil way, you can talk about their behavior and how it affects you. And together, you can talk about, can we change this? Is it possible to change this?
You know, sounds right, and I agree with you. And yet I'm thinking about a couple that came to me where the woman is quite irritable and quite negative. It's kind of her bent, if you would. And I can remember saying something close to this, probably not as articulate as you said, but, you know, I cannot change others, but I can influence them. And I said to the husband, you know, when you come home, you know, give her a hug, give her a kiss, put some of the other things aside. He said, fine, but, you know, she growls at me, and then it makes me mad.
And I understand. See, we understand that we all have emotional responses to things. I mean, all day long, we're having emotions. You don't ask for your emotions. Right. They just grab you when people do things to you. But if we understand that I don't have to follow my emotions, what I need to do is to step back a moment when I have a negative emotion and say, okay, what happened to trigger this? And now how am I going to respond to it? And you have a thoughtful response to it rather than just a reaction to what happened, because your reaction will almost always be negative and make things worse. But if I take time to think, what would be the loving thing to do in this situation, I'm far more likely to do something that'll have a positive influence on
it. So what would be the loving thing to do? You came home and you gave your wife that hug and that kiss, and you were kind, and then she started growling. And by the way, it's a lot of times the opposite way, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What would be the loving thing to do on that?
I think a loving thing to do would be to say, you know, honey, sounds like you've had a hard day. And then she said, well, I did have a hard day, and And then you say, honey, obviously I can't correct all of that, but is there anything I could do that would be helpful to you tonight? And maybe she would have an idea, and you do it. You've made things better. You've been empathetic with her struggle, because you don't know what a person's gone through. You know, you hug and kiss and then they growl, but you don't know what they've been through that day. Right. But if you ask, you know, if you say, it sounds like you've had a hard day, you want to tell me about it? And then you say, what can I do to help? You create a different atmosphere.
Right. And that makes so much sense. I mean, one of the things that I underlined in Desperate Marriage was most human behavior is motivated by what a lot of psychologists call the hidden self.
Yeah.
And so we're not psychologists typically. We're the husband. We're the wife.
Right.
But we've got to somehow figure out what is going on in the hidden self. Is that right?
There's always something behind behavior. You know, if I get up and walk out of the room and go into the kitchen, there's something behind that behavior. Maybe I'm going to get a drink of water. Maybe I'm thirsty. Or maybe I've had enough of what my wife is saying, and I'm just going to try to get out and get a little breathing room. There's always something going on inside of a person behind every behavior. And if we can understand this and begin to look for what I'm calling the hidden self, what's behind the behavior. And often it's an effort to meet a need. Sometimes behavior is designed to meet a need. For example, if a wife is saying to a husband, we don't ever spend any time together anymore. I mean, we're like two ships passing in the night. I mean, you're never here. You're working. Okay, now his natural response is to say, woman, you know, somebody's got to pay the bills. You know, and he goes into this, you know, logical thing. But if he understands that there's a need behind her behavior, very likely the need to feel loved. That her love language is probably quality time. She hasn't felt love for a long time now because there's been no quality time. And her ranting and raving behind that behavior is this need to feel loved. And if he understands that that is her love language, he can spot it probably and be able to say, honey, you know, you're exactly right. Why don't we take a weekend off? Let's just the two and I, let's go to the beach or let's go do something together. So he's responding to the need rather than responding to the behavior.
You know, it's right. It's hard.
It is hard.
Because we'll sometimes react to that behavior so quickly. I want to talk about the depressed spouse. So many people talk to me about the fact that their marriage is wrecked by a spouse who struggles with depression, and they really don't know what to do because they don't feel like they can come down as harsh in terms of tough love or whatever, but their spouse is struggling with depression. It really is, you know, wreaks havoc to the marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the early days, they may be harsh with them because they feel like, you need to snap out of this. You're a Christian. Come on, you know. Right. But then after a while, they typically withdraw and they're living in the same house. and they're going about their life, but there's really no intimacy, there's no nothing there. And what I'm saying to them is, yes, you want to speak their love language, whatever it is, be sure you're speaking their love language, but then you also want to say to them, you know, honey, I love you too much to do nothing. I know you don't want to get on medication. I know how you've said that to me. You don't want to go to the doctor, but we're going to go to the doctor. And if I have to get some help to come over here and physically take you, then we will do it. But I'm going to take you to the doctor, and we're going to get an answer to this. There is an answer to this. You don't have to be like this forever. And when they really come down hard and really take follow through, then if they not if they won't go with you, then you bring their brother over, you know, big brother, and let him physically help you actually right. take her to the doctor. Because the fact is, there's help for depression, mm-hmm. and often it does involve medication, and some people are anti-medicine. They don't want to take medication, but often that's a part of the process. The most effective means for depression typically is medication and counseling, because there's some relational things, emotional things going on there. But you essentially are forcing them to get help because you love them.
Yeah, and in so many ways, it comes back to the same thing. It comes back to forcing them to get help because you love them,
right.
showing sometimes tender love, sometimes tough love. Yeah. And in some ways, tender and tough love aren't that different.
No, they both have the same objective, and right. that is to do something positive about the situation.
Right. Now, you've seen, you know, hundreds, thousands of desperate marriages over the years, and you've seen many of them recover. And we've been talking yes. about hope as well. Under some pretty dire circumstances, I might add, I want you to encourage our listeners here at the end that desperate marriages can get better.
Well, I really believe that, Jim. I'm very empathetic with people who are in difficult marriages, because, you know, when you're married to a spouse and you feel like there's no cooperation, they're not making any steps in the right direction, and everything they're doing is detrimental to the marriage and sometimes to the family, you do feel like giving up. And this book is really written to that spouse. I didn't write the book for couples to sit down and read together, because in a desperate marriage, one of them is not going to read a book. But if the other one is willing to read a book and think about how can I be a positive change agent right. in this marriage, then there's hope. As long as one person will choose to do positive things, there's hope for that marriage.
Well, that's great news. Thanks so much. You've got to come back so we can unpack this more.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that concludes part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with Dr. Gary Chapman here on the Homeward Broadcast. Help and Hope for Desperate Marriages has been our theme. Gary is the author of the book Desperate Marriage, and if you go to homeward.com, you can listen to the program. Of course, you'll also find a link to Gary's website, too, and learn more about the books. He's written quite a few, and some of them you might have heard of, like The Five Love Languages, for example. That's a rather popular book, several hundred million copies sold, I think. Well, maybe not that many, but it seems like the sales continue to grow on Five Love Languages, and Desperate Marriage is a book that's not going to sell multi-millions, but it's going to help hundreds of thousands of couples, too. Also, check out the books that Jim has written about marriage. Creating an Intimate Marriage is a good one. Also, the devotional book, Closer, actually the Faith Conversation Starter book for couples, weekly faith conversations that you and your spouse can have to improve the quality of your marriage. Learn more about how to order any of Dr. Jim Burns' books when you visit our online resource center today at homeward.com.
Well, please know how much we appreciate your prayers and your ongoing financial support of Homeward. You can give a gift through our secure website at homeward.com. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. You can also friend me on Facebook, and if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can now get my tweets, 140 characters of positive words about parenting, marriage, and faith. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for tuning in today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.